You're listening to the UAE's number one talk radio station.
This is The Agenda
on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Hello there, and thank you for downloading The Agenda's podcast from the 6th of February. And on the programme today, we got the latest on the devastating earthquake that struck southern Turkey and northern Syria. Authorities say it measured 7.9 on the Richter scale. We found out more with our seismologist Khalifa Al-Abri from the National Centre of Meteorology in Abu Dhabi. Meanwhile, the US and China are at loggerheads over the giant balloon that strayed into American territory. Is it a spy balloon or a weather balloon? And is there a difference? We found out with aviation and drone expert Mike Rudolph. Meanwhile, the Grammys were just finishing up during our programme over in Los Angeles. Producer Andrew Hosey followed all the action and kept us updated with the winners. Now, a devastating earthquake with a magnitude of, and I have to say the seismologists differ on this, either 7.4 or 7.9, has struck southern Turkey and northern Syria. Now, authorities in each country are reporting nearly 100 deaths and hundreds of injuries. The numbers are coming through constantly on our news feeds at the moment, and they just keep on going up. So far, Syria, they say 110 people were killed and more than 500 injured. Meanwhile, in Turkey, the latest figures are 76 killed and more than 440 injured. And sadly, those numbers do seem to continue to rise. Now, the incident, which was initially reported in the region around the Turkish city of Karamanmaras, was also felt as far away as Syria, Cyprus and Lebanon. Dozens of buildings have collapsed in the quake, triggering a search for survivors under the rubble across the region from Aleppo all the way to Salkin on the Turkish border. CNN's meteorologist Brandon Miller explains why this earthquake could be particularly devastating.
It's February. It's a cold time of the year, but temperatures are even a little bit lower than they would normally be. We even saw some snow in the region, northern Syria, southern Turkey earlier. This is, of course, an area where there's a lot of Syrian refugee camps, and the snow has been impacting them. In this location where these buildings are, there's obviously a lot of damage, but there were a lot of other cities impacted by this earthquake as well, and towns and rural villages that no doubt felt even stronger shaking as they were closer to the epicenter, some of them.
Now, a little bit earlier, I spoke to Khalifa Al-Abri. He's a seismologist at the National Centre of Meteorology here in Abu Dhabi. And he gave me a little bit of a sense of the seriousness of this earthquake.
Actually, there are two earthquakes recorded today greater than 6 magnitude. The first one was a magnitude 7.4 Richter scale, occurred in southern Turkey, as you know, near the northern border of Syria. And the second one was an aftershock earthquake 11 minutes later with a magnitude 6.1. The magnitude 7.4 earthquake resulted from strikes reporting at shallow depth 10 kilometers. And just to know that in the past, only three earthquakes of magnitude 6 or larger have occurred within 250 kilometers of the today earthquake since 1970. And that time, the largest of these, a magnitude 6.7, occurred northeast of the today earthquake on January 24, 2020. All of these earthquakes occurred along or in the vicinity on the East Anatolian fault.
You mentioned there the fault. Is that the reason for these very serious earthquakes?
Yes, you are right. Actually, the earthquakes is like occurred within the vicinity of triple junction between the Anatolia, Arabia and Africa plates. The mechanism and location of the earthquake are consistent with the earthquake having occurred on the East Anatolia fault zone. And as you said, the East Anatolian fault accommodates the westward extrusion of Turkey and the Aegean Sea. And the magnitude that 7.4 is classified actually as a strong earthquake, and it may cause damage on the buildings and the areas around the center of that earthquake.
Just to put this into context, how serious is an earthquake that measures 7.4 or an earthquake that measures over 7? Is it a scale out of 10?
Yeah, actually, we have a Richter scale and the Mercalli scale. So that magnitude actually is calculated in the Richter scale. And as you said, it's like from the 10 scale. So we have here 7.4, and that one is classified as a strong earthquake. which may cause damage on the buildings around the areas of the epicenter of the earthquake.
Is the depth of an earthquake relevant when it comes to damage?
Not necessarily, actually. The depth of an earthquake does not determine its impact, but rather its magnitude and location. So shallow earthquakes which occur near the Earth's surface may have strong ground motion, for sure, and can cause significant damage in populated areas. On the other hand, deep earthquakes may have weaker ground motion and may not cause significant damage, but can still be felt over a large area. And the impact, actually, of an earthquake depends on a variety of factors, including the magnitude of earthquake, the distance from the earthquake's epicenter, the type of soil and geology, and the proximity to human structures and infrastructure.
Well, yes, we are now getting reports. The initial reports of damage were coming from Turkey. We're now getting reports of many people killed in Syria as well. Do you think it's likely that we could now see aftershocks for the next few days?
Sure, yeah. This is normally to really release the energy, the rest of the energy. So most of the time when it's happened such kind of magnitude, more than 7, it's normally to have these aftershocks during these days, and sometimes it's keep releasing the energy for a month or even couple of months.
Do you ever get a situation where the aftershocks are as strong or potentially even stronger than the initial earthquakes?
You cannot predict that magnitude of the aftershock, but most of the time the aftershock, as you see today, the main earthquake was 7.4 and the aftershock was much less with 6.1. So that's normal, I mean, to have it like less than that, the main one, which is sometimes when it's happened more than 7, for sure it will be less than the main one.
Khalifa Al-Abri there, a seismologist at the National Centre of Meteorology here in Abu Dhabi, giving us a sense there of the likelihood of more aftershocks. It sounds like those could happen, but they should be reducing in magnitude. We will be keeping you updated right here on The Agenda on Dubai Eye 103.8 as more news comes through of that earthquake in southern Turkey and northern Syria. We're going to turn our attention now to the United States because China is threatening what it calls further actions after an American fighter jet shot down a suspected spy balloon. These Americans say they saw the incident.
Here we go. Boom!
Chaz, come here. They're shooting at it.
All of a sudden, I seen the missile come out. It hit the balloon. The balloon's falling.
It is not looking like a balloon anymore.
Brilliant voices there from the United States. Now, America says that the balloon had crossed over sensitive military sites. Its Navy is now trying to recover its remnants from the sea off South Carolina. Now, former U.S. defense official Elbridge Colby says the aim is to recover any technology on board.
The issue will be whether the reconnaissance capabilities or other kinds of interesting items that were on the balloon will be recoverable. I mean, he said the 12 nautical mile line, so that points out that the administration wanted to shoot it down within U.S. territorial airspace and have it land within American territorial waters.
Meanwhile, Sky Asia correspondent Helen Ann Smith says that Beijing's issued a statement outlining its strong dissatisfaction.
Describing the shooting down of that air balloon as a obvious overreaction, seriously violating international conventions, the Chinese said. And perhaps this that will stick in the minds, particularly that China will reserve the right to take further necessary response.
China and East Asia expert Roderick Wai says he does expect Beijing to retaliate.
They will find some way of reacting to this. I doubt whether it would be in a military sense, but there will be some kind of Chinese reaction imposing more difficulties and constraints on the US in their relationship.
Now, certainly it's clear that this balloon is causing a major international incident between the world's two largest powers. So let's find out a bit more about these balloons. I'm joined on the line now by aviation and drone consultant Mike Rudolph. Hi, Mike. How are you? Good morning.
Morning, morning, morning.
Lovely to have you with us. Tell me a bit more about what these balloons can be used for.
Okay, so the technology that they used has been around for quite some time in the meteorological field, whereby helium balloons are released into the atmosphere. They normally transcend up to about 50,000 feet above the ground, and they gather weather data that is then returned, or the signal is returned back to Earth. The weather data is to do with either upper air winds and other. And then what happens is that the balloon envelope itself, when it gets to about 50,000 feet, because of the pressure, it pops. and then the telemetry and the payload anyway is basically then recovered on Earth as that payload is then released back by a small parachute. So the technology that they've been using now has been around for a while.
It all sounds very innocent indeed. Just a lovely balloon floating up, floating along, and then, you know, popping.
Correct. So the interesting effect about this is what has been said from both sides. And it's all going to be put to bed once the payload that was carried on this balloon has been interrogated and identified. From the Chinese side, they are saying that it was purely a civilian operation, providing for a weather data and other. And obviously, from the Americans, they are a little bit wary that it might have been gathering other information. That all has to do purely with the payload, and that is what the two sides are now disputing. And that will only be truly put to bed once the payload is recovered, or the fragments and or other, and then the storyline put together to conclude which side is correct.
Yes, and I mean, obviously, here in the UAE, you know, as individuals, we don't know whether this balloon was indeed being used for spying or just as a weather forecasting device. But conceivably, could these types of balloons be used for spying?
So we need to understand that the balloon is only a vehicle. It's the same as a drone or even a conventional aircraft. They are only the vehicle. It's got to do with the payload capabilities. And the payload capabilities we've seen, especially in the drone environment, can be put to the negative and be used in bad ways. And I'm sure with the balloons, this can be used as well. I also have to say that some years back, Google launched a project called Loon, and they tried to provide for Wi-Fi coverage over areas and countries that did not have the ground infrastructure. And they used a similar concept of what they call zero pressure balloons that operate in the stratosphere and are navigated by the winds. So it would either go up or go down, and the wind direction would keep it in proximity of the ground infrastructure, providing for Wi-Fi coverage. So in this case, we have to wait and see. Was it really being used to the detriment, or is it something that was possibly used positively?
So I think that part of the argument has been that the Chinese suggested that it was innocently sort of blown off course, whereas the Americans suggest that it was being steered remotely. Now, are both of those arguments conceivable?
Correct. So anyone that knows balloon operations will tell you that it has limited navigational capabilities, but relies on the wind. In the stratosphere, we have the winds blowing at different directions. So let's say, for example, if you wanted to go to the left and the wind above you was blowing to that direction, you would then add more air to the balloon envelope and you would climb, and the balloon would then go in that direction. And it's the same as if you wanted to go in another direction, you would have to descend. So by increasing the envelope size, by either going up and appreciating the wind direction that could help you with navigation, that is basically how they get around it. So it has very limited navigational or directional change capabilities.
How big is it? I mean, I've seen lots of pictures of it, but no one's putting a 5 pence piece next to it, you know, so that I can work out what its actual size is. I mean, are we talking like a swimming pool here, or a hot air balloon, or, you know, how big is it?
Yeah, I would say that it's definitely bigger than a conventional a tourist balloon that we see operating in Dubai to go to the stratosphere. The panels that you've seen identified on various media with various media coverage, those are the solar panels, and all those panels do are provide for an energy source to the balloon that would then help the payload to be effective. So in other words, it's in simple terms, it's like a battery. So when they talk about the panels being the size of a double-decker bus, that is quite conceivable, because you need to extrapolate as much sunlight as possible to ensure that the energy levels are maintained and that the equipment contained within the payload remains functional. From the envelope perspective, I would guesstimate that it's something more than four times the size of an average football field. And then obviously the helium or hydrogen contained within is quite substantial as well.
How heavy an item could it carry? I mean, I suppose this is me trying to figure out whether it might be a spy balloon, but I guess cameras can be pretty small nowadays. So in some ways, it's not that helpful.
The payload obviously determines the size of the envelope you would require. So obviously, the bigger the envelope, the greater the payload. If you have, if you look at the size and just look at the weight of a conventional solar panel today, and try and see how many solar panels were identified on this vehicle, you can understand that that alone would be quite a substantial weight. And that's not even taking into account the actual payload, which I think must be quite heavy as well. So the size of the envelope determines the weight or the payload that could be carried by the balloon.
Well, it sounds like the remnants of the balloon landed in only 14 metres, that's 47 feet of water, much shallower than the officials in the US expected. It spread over a 7-mile radius, so hopefully they should be able to retrieve that payload fairly shortly. So I'm sure they'll be telling the world exactly what was on that balloon in the near future. Mike Rudolph, as always, thank you so much for keeping us informed on exactly how these types of balloons can work. Obviously, we don't know yet. Who's telling the truth? Are the Chinese telling the truth? Was it a weather balloon? Or are the Americans right that it was indeed spying on sensitive sites on US soil? Interesting stuff. A story that we will continue to follow right here on the agenda on Dubai Eye 103.8 for some time. Mike Rudolph, thank you so much for your time, as always. And we will be speaking to you again soon, I'm sure. Thank you very much indeed. You're listening to The Agenda on Dubai 103.8. Georgia here. So you wait for one sports correspondent and then two come along, just like buses. Hi, Dane.
Oh, you can't call me that after you've had Chris McCarthy in here. I mean, seriously.
Well, I thought you were going to say you can't call me a bus. But you don't want to be called a sports correspondent. I know that he is a guru.
I just got told off by him because I said, you've literally gone from Thomas Tuchel to Graham Potter, with me being Graham Potter, and he told me off, didn't he?
Well, he went... to be honest, I didn't understand most of it because you were talking about managers and whether or not they were good for Chelsea.
Yeah.
And Graham Potter will be good.
He will be good.
That was the sort of roundup.
Yeah, so maybe he was actually saying, Dame, one day he'll be all right.
Hold firm, he was saying. Hold firm, you Chelsea fan there, Dane.
Yeah.
I'm always fascinated by the teams that people choose to support, because often they bend zero recognition or resemblance to where they live.
Yeah, that's a bit like me.
Yeah, but my husband supports, well, he doesn't really, I suppose, Arsenal, I suppose. Is it Arsenal? I can't remember now. Anyway. And then you've got Andrew from Scotland and... As you know, Tom Urquhart's sort of Scottish as well.
They
support
like
West Ham. Is it a Scottish thing?
Don't know.
Despite West Ham being on the outskirts of London.
Yeah.
Yeah, anyway. Right, I'm going to move on before I lose myself in some sort of strange football cul-de-sac where I don't really understand what I'm saying. And we're going to talk about the football over the weekend. So Tottenham boss Antonio Conte calling Harry Kane. They're buddies, they are.
Well, it was to congratulate him on becoming the club's all-time leading goal scorer following their 1-0 Premier League victory over Manchester City. A big win for them. The Italian was recovering at home after undergoing surgery to remove his gallbladder. Conte's assistant, Christian Stellini, says he was so pleased with the result and Kane's historic winner. He gave the squad a special treat.
He was really happy. He made compliments to everyone, especially to Harry for the record he achieved. And he's amazing and was really happy, and he gave them a day off.
A day off?
Yep. How generous.
I thought it was going to be cake at least, but maybe don't give footballers cake. Special boots, maybe. New laces. New rainbow laces.
You know, when you said you're getting lost in that football.
Yeah, yeah, just carry on, Manchester
boss. Think you are. Yeah. Man City boss Pep Guardiola admits they're struggling to find their best form this season following the 1-0 defeat at Tottenham. They'd moved within 2 points of a Premier League leaders Arsenal by winning, but the champions are 5 points off the top, having played a game more. Guardiola says everyone at the club has to look at themselves.
I have a lot of gratitude for these players. Always I try to do my best. I don't want to drop much, and I knew it. I said many times, so I knew it, that we are not the same after winning a lot, and me included, me the first when I'm talking about that.
Nottingham Forest boss Steve Cooper was full of praise for goalkeeper Keylor Navas after a 1-0 victory over Leeds boosted his side's hopes of avoiding Premier League relegation. The three-time Champions League winner, who's on loan from Paris Saint-Germain, made a number of impressive saves at Forest as they moved 6 points clear of the bottom three. Cooper says it was some debut.
You don't need me to tell you about his experience and about his success he's had in his career. He would have still wanted to do well in his new club in his first game, I'm sure. And he did. You know, he was brilliant first half, outstanding and composed.
Meanwhile, Leeds manager Jesse Marsh insists he takes responsibility for their poor form after the 1-0 defeat at Nottingham Forest left them just outside the Premier League relegation zone. A run of 7 top-flight games without a win means the Yorkshire club are only clear of the bottom three on goal difference. The fans are far from happy, and Marsh can see why.
It's my responsibility, and I understand their frustration, and I accept it. And I have to find a way to turn a lot of the good things that are happening into results, or we find ourselves in a stressful situation.
American accent there.
Yeah.
Intriguing. You don't normally hear that in Premier League football.
Yeah, it's rare.
It's rare,
but it's there. Have you seen the Apple TV show?
No, not yet. Oh, I really want to watch it. I want to watch the one with Ryan Reynolds in it about his team.
Yeah, well, that's a documentary about Wrexham.
Yeah, I want to see that too.
You should.
See that. There's been rugby over the weekend, hasn't there? Six Nations.
Yeah, France survived a scare to get their Rugby Union Six Nations title defence off to a winning start with a 29-24 victory over Italy. The champions were 24-22 down going into the final stages of their opening match in Rome before fighting back. They continue their campaign away to favourites Ireland next Saturday. Italy visit Twickenham to face England on Sunday.
Big weekend of football for the English there. Fun stuff. Dane Swindles, thank you very much indeed for all your help. Thank you for coming in to do our sport. I know you're a busy man out there in the newsroom at the moment.
That was rugby, by the way.
Did I say football?
You did.
I thought I just said sport.
No, you said football.
At the moment, Mr. Swindles, I'm just remaining happy that I still have my voice after a weekend of talking nearly incessantly. But you're right, I really should get the sport right. You're right. The Grammys have been going on over in Los Angeles. I imagine all the awards have now been handed out. So I imagine the after parties have kicked off. Andrew Hosey has been following the story for us all morning.
I have barely
done anything else at all. Just following the television, watching what's going on, and joins me now in the studio to talk us through all the winners and losers. What's been going down, Andrew?
Well, Beyonce, basically.
Is it all about Queen Bee?
She has broken a record, basically. She has taken her career total to 32 Grammys. This is after winning 4 awards overnight. So she overtook Hungarian-British conductor George Solti, no less. His record of 31 Grammys has stood for more than 20 years. And I'm guessing that if you were asked a trivia question about who has won the most Grammys, no one would ever say George Solti.
Never heard of him.
He was a very famous conductor. So among her trophies were Best Dance Album for Renaissance. You won't break my soul. You won't break my soul. You won't break my soul. You won't break my
George Salt, he didn't write songs like that, did he?
He did not. And you can see with, you know, that piece there, why she won the Best Dance Album. Okay. She said she was trying not to be too emotional when she accepted a prize. She went on to thank her family, including her late uncle Johnny, who helped make her stage outfits before she became famous. She actually missed a couple of the early presentations. You know, she had four. She missed a couple. She won Cuff It and Break My Soul. They were also recognised. She got stuck in traffic.
Do they not know who she is?
Indeed. I mean, I thought she would have had a police escort, but no, she got gridlocked in downtown Los Angeles.
That's extraordinary. Did she wait? So she won for those two tracks, Cuff It and Break My Soul, but didn't manage to turn up. That's extraordinary.
Yeah.
Goodness me, who'd have thought that even Queen Bee could get caught in
Indeed,
traffic?
Indeed, it happens to the best of us.
And makes you realise quite what a coup that Atlantis, the Royal, pulled off by managing to book her for that private performance just a couple of weekends ago. For her to then go on and become the biggest Grammy Award winning star of all time. They really did get the top person, didn't they?
They did indeed, yes. But you know what? Oh. Her tally did not include the night's biggest award last night. The award is, of course, for Album of the Year. And she's now lost that prize four times. Most notably in 2017 when Lemonade was beaten by Adele's 25.
I remember that. Adele went on stage and essentially apologised.
Pretty much.
She said, I can't believe I've won and you haven't been.
Yes. But she didn't hand over the prize in shame, did she? No, she kept the Grammy.
Yeah, that's just sensible.
Yes.
She deserved it, to be honest. Adele's amazing.
Absolutely. This year, the award went to Harry Styles. We heard him earlier, and he won for Harry's House. In this world, it's just us.
You know, it's not the same as it was. Big fan. Big
I do believe so, yes.
Fan.
Singing away.
Huge fan.
Song.
I mean, I can't sing for the life of me, but Harry Styles is very cool. There you go.
That's his album bagged two awards, actually, including Best Pop Vocal Album, beating Adele, Coldplay, ABBA and Lizzo to the trophy. But Adele did win an award. She won for Best Pop Solo Performance for Easy On Me.
It's a sign of how good a song is that I don't want to fade it. Like, it's just too good. You
it
just want to listen to the end, don't you?
You can see why she won Best Pop Solo Performance for that track. Lizzo also scored a win Record of the Year for About Damn Time. Turn up the music. Turn down the lights. So Sam Smith's track Unholy won Best Pop Duo for his collaboration with Kim Petras. Kendrick Lamar won in three rap categories, while singer-songwriter Bonnie Raitt was the surprise winner of Song of the Year. She beat out favourites Taylor Swift and Beyoncé with her ballad Just Like That.
I literally...
Just like that your life can change. If I hadn't looked away, my boy might still be with me now. It'd be 25 today. No knife can carve away the stain. No drink can drown regret.
Do you know, I've never heard of Bonnie Raitt.
Have you not heard of Bonnie Raitt?
Literally never heard of Bonnie Raitt.
I haven't heard that song. But,
I haven't heard of Bonnie Raitt. Amazing. Well, there we go. There's an album to listen to later on today. Fantastic stuff. How about any of the other winners that I probably haven't heard of since I'm not very up to date with popular music?
Well, Viola Davis.
Yeah, never heard
of her. Actress. She's joined an illustrious club with her award last night. She was awarded the Grammy for Best Audiobook Narration and Storytelling Recording for the audio version of her memoir, Finding Me.
I wrote this book to honor the 6-year-old Viola. To honor her life, her joy, her trauma, everything. And it has just been such a journey. I just EGOT.
She what?
She EGOT. Id.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
she what?
So that means she's won an Emmy, a Grammy, an Oscar and a Tony Award. So she's only the 18th person in history to have done that. Joining a very illustrious club.
Impressive stuff, I have to say. I feel deeply embarrassed that I haven't heard of her. How can I be this bad at popular culture? I'm spending far too much time reading about random radiation vessels that get lost in Australia. I need to focus on the music instead. Thank you so much. Absolutely amazing to hear about how those Grammy Awards took place over in Los Angeles. Of course, everyone now enjoying the after parties. I look forward to seeing the photographs of stars stumbling out of nightclubs in the early hours of LA's morning, hour, afternoon. It's always the best part. They always do three outfits, one for the carpet, one for the awards, and then the best one's always for the party. So I'll be looking out on the Daily Mail online for those pictures. Of course, actually, yes, yeah. I mean, that's basically where they put them, let's be honest. The Agenda is live Monday to Friday from 10 a.m. till 1 p.m.